rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Bruce Castle presiding. All who have business before this court draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. You may be seated.
Thank you. First, let me just note our men and women in uniform. Thank you for your service and for being here today. Good morning. I'm Chief Judge Castle. To my right is Judge Mormon. To my left is Judge Sholin. We're here today in the matter of Mitchell versus Shinseki. It has a docket number of 092169. Would counsel for both parties please note their appearance for the record?
Lewis Campbell, Henderson, Farabaugh, Garrett, and Dunner. Is Ron Smith.
Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm Brent Boker for the Department of Veterans Affairs, and with me at counsel table is David Quinn.
Thank you very much. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
Each party will have 30 minutes to present their respective arguments. Mr. Campbell, do you wish to reserve a portion of your time for rebuttal?
10 minutes, Your Honor.
You have it. Thank you. You may proceed.
May it please the court. Painful motion is limited motion. This court has said so in both Lichtenfels and
all right, I'm just going to take into something that's confusing me right off the bat.
Yes.
Or at least 4.10. And you're welcome to look at the regulation if you need to remind yourself. But as I read it, it's functional impairment, which focuses on a lack of usefulness, correct?
That's correct.
4.40, functional loss, focuses on an inability to perform the normal working movements. It may be due to pain, and it does say pain on use must be regarded seriously disabled.
That's correct.
And then you get 4.45, factors for disability include pain on movement. And 4.59, except for discussion purposes, I understand there's a case as to whether or not it applies outside of arthritis, but except for discussion purposes, painful motion is an important factor. It's to be recognized by the schedule. And then as I understand your argument, you go into 5014 diagnostic code, which brings you into 5003, which has a definition of limitation of motion objectively confirmed by findings such as swelling, muscle spasm, or satisfactory evidence of painful motion. And you have recognized here by the doctor and apparently by the board that there is pain on motion from the very beginning, and that your position is that therefore they're entitled to the maximum rating under the diagnostic code 52, 60, and 61. Is that your position?
It is, although I don't believe you need to use 5003 in this case because it's not an arthritis case. Like, it really is immaterial whether you use it or not.
Well, I thought 5014 brings you into 5003. Specifically says rate under 5003.
Let me check that here. It really doesn't matter because either way we have to go to 5260. If we're under 5003, the first step is to look at 5260, and if we don't use it, there's a knee issue, limitation issue, which would bring us straight to 5260. So how we
get there? What about Lichtenfels? Lichtenfels says that the diagnostic codes provide an actual limitation and that pain is to be considered the minimum rating if your actual limitation does not provide for a rating.
Lichtenfels says that painful motion is limited motion. It was making that holding in the context of 5003, so it adds the requirements of 5003 to that statement. But
Then let's go back to 5003. Tell me why 5003 doesn't apply.
Because 5003 is limited to arthritis, and there's no arthritis.
Doesn't your client have osteomalacia under 5014?
We have a reconstructed ACL.
Is that a no?
That's a no, yes.
Okay.
But it leads to a knee limitation, which requires a rating under 5260 and 5261.
So you're arguing the rating by analogy where the secretary used 5003 is not the appropriate diagnostic code?
Hypothetically, no, it's not correct, but again, it really doesn't much matter because either way it gets us to 5260 and 5261.
Well, if we have to go through 5003, do we still get to 5260?
You do. The first step of 5003 is to look at the limit, the diagnostic codes for that particular joint. And there's also x-ray evidence of this ACL reconstruction. So if we had to use 5003, all the elements are met, and we still end up at 5260.
Well, then you have DeLuca, which talks about 440 and 445. and it focuses on pain if it causes a limitation, a functional limitation, that it is to be considered.
Yes, that case requires painful motion to be considered under the evaluation.
As a limitation on your functional ability.
Well, in both DeLuca, Lichtenfels, Hicks, there were actual physical limitations, and then in addition, there was further pain on motion. And in all of those cases, they were remanded back for consideration of the pain in addition to the physical limitation.
So do you have to have a functional limitation, either loss or impairment?
You do, and one way to get there is painful motion that satisfies the threshold requirements of 4.40.
And so your position is that any pain observable here, any pain, is a functional loss or impairment?
Any pain that satisfies the requirements of a visible behavior of the claimant in support of adequate pathology, it's required under 4.40. Yes, any pain that satisfies.
How does that translate into lack of usefulness, which is a functional impairment under 4.10, or an inability to perform normal working movements under 4.40? What's the evidence of that?
Well, 4.10 describes whether it uses a functional loss is whether it the veteran can, under the ordinary conditions of daily life, including employment, use the joint. And in this case, a painful joint that satisfies the requirements is not as useful as a non-painful joint, and therefore satisfies.
Are you suggesting there's a separate rating that could be given for 4.10 and 4.40, as opposed to it showing some type of functional loss or impairment? That would you could move it to here, but you have a lot of pain here, and therefore the doctor assesses it and says you've got functional loss. Are you suggesting that this is an additional rating beyond that, or
yeah,
it's
well,
part of the
what we're suggesting? I'm sorry, cut off. What we're suggesting is you rate the limitation for whatever physical impairment there might be, and if there's an additional painful range of motion, that also qualifies as a limitation of motion.
Okay, so what's your limitation of motion here?
The painful motion. I mean, the record shows a physical limitation of 30 degrees on flexion and 5 degrees on extension. In addition to that, all motion is painful.
So all motion. And what's the lack of usefulness that's demonstrated in these medical records?
It's a painful joint, and it's shown that she can't maintain her security guard work because of the painful knee.
Is that reflected in the medical records? I'm sorry. Is that reflected in the medical records?
I believe that was in her application.
Okay.
Before we get to the medical records or the application, in your first brief, you say several times, or at least twice, that the board made findings that she had pain throughout the entire range of motion. Could you please point me to the place where the board made those findings?
Well, they were quoting from the second medical exam, the October 06 medical exam, which very clearly stated that all motion of the knee was painful.
But weren't they quoting that in the context of quoting all the medical evidence?
Yes, I believe they were.
So they didn't make any finding in that regard?
Well, they didn't find any reason to anything that contradicted the findings of that medical examiner. So at that point, they've adopted that as a finding.
Well, the board actually, on record 9, says something quite differently, don't they? They say, although the veteran's pain must be considered in evaluating her service-connected disability, the schedule does not require a separate rating for pain. And then they go on that same paragraph and say, in fact, it is the painful and limited motion objectively confirmed by swelling and evidence of painful motion, which is the basis for the veteran's current 10% rating. And then they conclude by saying the veteran's reports of pain do not more nearly approximate the criteria for increased 20% rating. So in terms of what the board did, I just want to clearly differentiate between the board and the medical exams, because I know there's a difference. You know, what's your position with regard to what the board found?
Well, the board in that section is it appears to be getting into an analysis under the diagnostic codes in addition to the what facts we're dealing with in this case. And we agree with them that there's not a separate rating for pain, but that there's a combined rating for functional limitation of the joint. And to find that functional limitation, you look at both the physical limitation and the painful motion. And you put both of those ranges together to find the functional limitation.
Okay, but just to nail this down, did the board find that all motions were painful?
I don't believe they specifically said that as a finding. In the section of their decision of findings of fact, that's not listed there. But I would argue that that is a finding implicit in their decision.
I'd like to talk a little bit about your response to the court's order, talking a little bit about what level of pain, if any, threshold is required. Your response said that considering whether the pain is severe or mild or moderate was not a lawful consideration. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
So your position is, irrespective of the level of pain that the veteran is experiencing, that equates to the loss of range of motion for VA purposes.
Somewhat. It's important to state that it's not enough to just walk into the medical examiner's office and say, my knee hurts. You have to have adequate pathology, and you have to have visible behavior that backs up that report of pain. But once you've met that standard, there's nothing in the regulations that would differentiate between mild, moderate, severe, any degree of pain. So we have to stick with the regulations as the Secretary has given them to us.
Does that create an absurd result, though, that somebody who actually can't lift their arm at all is compensated at the same level as somebody who can lift their arm through the entire range of motion with very mild pain?
Well, we can look at all the extremes and classify them as absurd or not absurd, but whether the regulations or whether it causes an absurd result only matters if we find the regulations to be ambiguous as written, and they're simply not. They require painful motion to be considered, and if that leads to circumstances where, you know, starting on a blank slate, we might rewrite the regulations in a different fashion, we really can't do that because the Secretary's done the regulations for us. They certainly could change the regulations, but as written, that's the result.
But don't they require pain on motion to be considered in the context of functional impairment or functional loss?
They do.
All right. So where's the evidence of any functional loss or functional impairment?
Well, we do. We have a sparse record in that regard. What we've got is the veteran reporting that she cannot find work, and she did have a security guard job that she had to stop because she couldn't deal with the standing anymore due to the pain in her knee. Beyond that, we don't have much.
Don't we have evidence in the record that she also has been employed as a paralegal, as a substitute teacher, as some other sedentary jobs?
There is evidence of that.
Other sedentary jobs.
There's evidence of that in the record, and there's simply no evidence on how the knee affects those jobs at all.
Getting back to your response to my question, that the regulations don't discuss the level of severity of the pain, so therefore you're left with just pain. But the diagnostic codes seem to gauge greater level of compensation based on greater level of disability. So how do we unify those two principles?
Well, I believe they're the same principles. So if we look at both physical limitation of a joint and painful limitation of a joint, the more of that you have, the higher your rating goes. So if you only have painful motion and no physical limitation for 10 degrees, you're rated at whatever that is for 10 degrees. And if you have limitation at 90 degrees, that's the rating you get for 90 degrees. And it's simply two ways to show a limitation, either a physical limitation or a painful limitation.
The record reflected, and I think the board noted, that the doctor said there was no change in the degree of movement on repetition.
That's correct.
Wouldn't that indicate that the pain was insignificant with regard to its movement? Not insignificant.
I think it was simply just reflect the pain was invariant.
Not affecting functional loss or functional impairment?
Well, if a joint is painful, it presumably is still painful on repetitive use. and it really doesn't matter whether there's repetitive use. The only mention in the regulations of repetitive use is with regard to weakness, which would suggest that if the joint becomes weaker or more painful or more limited on use, then you also look at that limitation in addition to the limitation on the first movement.
As I understand your argument with regard to the threshold, it's based on the reg 4.40 and the two criteria that are stated in the reg. Am I correct that there's adequate pathology and that there's visible behavior of the claimant undertaking the motion?
That's correct.
And once you reach those two thresholds, or the combined threshold, then you would say that any pain expressed throughout the range of motion is adequate to get the disability associated with limitation of function at that degree. Is that right?
Yes, that's our position.
Okay. Where in the record do we look to find this criteria met within the medical examinations that were performed in this case?
In the October 06 exam, there's two statements that are helpful in this regard. The first, all motions of the knee were painful. The second, which is three sentences later, all of these motions appeared to be painful. Now, these are the doctor's words. So,
well, aren't those mere conclusions?
They're conclusions, but
I mean,
they
where's the doctor's rationale? Where's the measurement?
The rationale is unfortunately not here. All we have are the conclusions, but the conclusions have to be based upon something. And the doctor is instructed to look for the visible behavior of the claimant. So it's presumed that he looked at the visible behavior of the claimant and came to the conclusion that the motions appeared to be painful.
But don't we in our case law require for an adequate medical examination that there be something more than mere conclusory statements from doctors?
I certainly would prefer there be more information in the record, but I believe this is the sufficient minimum level of what needs to be provided in the record.
Is it your position that your client also suffers from other of the criteria in 4.40 and DeLuca, such as weakness or instability or?
What we've got is just x-ray evidence and, of course, the evidence of the reconstruction of the ACL, along with some tenderness and swelling. That's all we've got to rely on in the record.
Okay. Shifting gears a little bit, it seems to me that part of your case relies upon applying the court's Lichtenfeld's decision into this context. If we were to reject your interpretation that Lichtenfeld's extends beyond applicability to 5003, does that affect your position?
It certainly would, and I think that conclusion would be contrary to the decision in Arneson, where 5260 and 5261 were actually at issue, and that was also in a 5003 context where the first step was they looked at 5260 and 5261. In that case, much like ours, the physical limitation would not allow for compensable rating. It wasn't enough.
Well, let us assume that I read Arneson differently than you for the sake of my question.
Okay.
What would your effect on your case be?
If you rule that Lichtenfeld's and Hicks are not applicable to this case, and by extension, Arneson and DeLuca and Powell and all of the cases we've cited, then yes, we...
You see them all as an inseparable mass.
I do.
I'd like to go back to 4.40. And it starts out, disability of the system is primarily the inability due to damage or infection in parts of the system to perform the normal working movements of the body with normal excursion, strength, speed, coordination, and endurance. Talks about functional loss may be due to absence in part or all of the necessary bones, joints, and muscles, etc. Or it may be due to pain, supported by adequate pathology and evidence by visible behavior of the claimant undertaking the motion. It doesn't say all pain causes it, just may be due to pain. At the end of the day, don't you still have to translate it into an inability to perform the normal working movements of the body with normal excursion?
You do, and I would argue that a painful joint doesn't have normal excursion. If it's painful, you cannot provide the normal excursion of joint movement.
But then doesn't that get into the secretary's rating schedule? And he said if you can move it up to a certain amount?
Well, the rating schedule provides ratings for limitations of movement. And the regulations say you have to consider pain when finding those limitations. This court's holdings have said you have to consider pain when finding those limitations. So once you found those limitations...
Doesn't this court's holding, I think you're talking about DeLuca, doesn't it say functional loss, functional impairment? At the end of the day, you still have to come back to the definitions of functional loss and functional impairment. And something is going to demonstrate that, but not all pain is going to demonstrate a functional loss.
All pain that satisfies the requirements of 4.40 does limit the normal excursion of working movement. So in that case, it is functional loss.
But you're limiting that to pain that's above that threshold that we talked about.
Indeed, I am.
Okay. Let me refer you back to the other exam that was done in 2006, the January 26, 2006 exam. And there, the doctor in that case, or the examiner in that case, said this: there is limited range of motion of the left knee. Extension is to 0 degrees. Flexion passively is to 100 degrees without pain. Active flexion is to 115 degrees with pain. Doesn't that strike you as a more objective assessment of where pain actually limits motion than just saying moving is pain?
Before you answer, would you add 2 minutes, please?
The two exams, the first one is, it does seem to have more objective measurements, and it would be something that would be better in the October exam. But the October exam, of course, is later in time, and it appears that the condition of the knee had deteriorated between January of 06 and October of 06. So we need to look at the October 06 exam as the best evidence of the knee condition. No further questions, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Chief Judge Castellon, may it please the court. The court should find that it's the functional impairment due to pain and not just the presence of pain itself that it constitutes functional loss under the regulations and the diagnostic criteria in this case.
How do you define functional impairment due to pain?
In this case, or with regards to 4.40 and 4.45, Your Honor, they refer to the working movements of the excursion of the joints. 4.45 specifically refers to a reduction in the excursion of the joints, Your Honor. And those have to be read in context with the diagnostic codes, which provide different ratings for limitation of motion. So under this criteria, Your Honor, it would be the limitation of the excursion of the joints.
Well, if I can actually only move my arm because of the physical disability, half of the range of motion, I can move up to that with pain, but I really don't want to. I'm guarding. It's really painful. It's basically like I can't move my arm, but you can manipulate it to that point physically, but no further. Wouldn't that be the equivalent of loss of range of motion?
Under the hypothetical, Your Honor, as I understand it, the movement would likely be limited by the guarding that you've described in that hypothetical.
Right, but the doctor could make it move up to 90 degrees. But I'm screaming and wincing, and I'm very unhappy.
Yes, Your Honor. It's not that there could be some sort of physical impediment, so to speak, to the limitation of motion, or it could be a limitation due to pain. And if a movement is limited by pain, it may be physically possible to move beyond that point.
Okay. Well, then why is the appellant's allegation and visible expression of pain insufficient to demonstrate functional loss?
Well, in this case, Your Honor, it's because the examiner found that that it was limited to 5 degrees extension, 90 degrees flexion, and then further, after repetitive motion, found that there was no further limitation.
Well, why does it have to be limited more based on repetitive use if it hurt the first time I did it?
It would not, Your Honor. But on the first time, it was only limited to 5 degrees extension and 90 degrees.
But the veteran asserted that it hurt the entire time getting up to minus 5 degrees of flexion.
That's correct, but the examiner did not find that the pain was limiting.
But the examiner noted that there was visceral pain. It's not clear to me your distinction between, is it the severity of the pain that you're relying on? I'm just having a hard time understanding what the Secretary's position is.
No, Your Honor, it's whether the pain limits the motion.
But then doesn't it become actual loss of motion instead of pain-limiting motion?
You can have both, Your Honor. You can have a loss of motion due to
a mechanical defect or something.
Or you can have it due to pain.
But if I can move it, but it's painful, you already told me that under the Secretary's definition that would be compensable.
If I'm understanding you correctly, if there is no loss of motion, but yet it's painful, you do get a compensable rating. That's consistent with Lichtenfels. And
I'm not just talking about under the arthritis context. I'm talking about a range of motion rating.
Yes, Your Honor.
So, again, what is the distinction between I'm arguing that it hurts and the veteran is arguing that it hurts?
I believe the distinction is whether the examiner found there is any additional loss of motion, Your Honor. In this case, the veteran said it hurt, but the examiner did not find that the pain caused any functional impairment beyond what was noted on the range of motion.
So it's the examiner not using magic words instead of saying all of these motions appear to be painful? If the doctor had said the range of motion from 0 to whatever it is, 115 degrees, appeared to be painful, would that have been adequate?
I think what would be adequate, Your Honor, is if the examiner said, just hypothetically speaking, the veteran can move from 0 to 115 degrees, but it's limited to 90 degrees, just to pick a number, by pain, as evidenced by the factors 4.40 or guarding or wincing.
Could they have said it's limited to 0 degrees with pain?
Hypothetically speaking, yes.
Isn't that what this doctor is saying?
No, Your Honor. The doctor is not saying that because the doctor said it was limited to 5 degrees on extension and 9 degrees on flexion.
I still don't understand your distinction. I'm sorry. But I'll move on for the sake of my colleagues.
Well, it sounds to me like what you're saying is that there's some level of pain that is limiting. And yet, VA doesn't specify what that threshold is. The appellant has suggested that there's a threshold in 4.40. What do you say about those two objective criteria that the appellant asserts establish a threshold?
Your Honor, the sentence he's describing says functional loss may be due to pain as evidenced by visible behavior. That's the visible behavior that supports the finding that there is pain. But the pain still has to cause functional loss under the first sentence.
So does it then become totally subjective based on who the veteran happens to be and what their pain tolerance is? If I am really tough and I'm able to work my way through excruciating pain to achieve a 90-degree bend in my knee, and somebody else is not able to work their way through the same pain and can only get to 70 degrees, do we get compensated at different levels?
Your Honor, it would be based on how the pain actually impairs your motion. So
So is that a yes?
Under the hypothetical, well, we have to take the claimants that as they come. If pain limits one claimant's range of motion differently than the other claimants, Your Honor, they would be rated differently.
So Marines would never be compensated for pain.
basically, the Secretary's regulation talks in terms of functional loss, functional impairment, and items are looked at to determine whether or not you have a functional loss or a functional impairment. The Secretary does say weakness is an important part of limitation of motion. A part which becomes painful on use must be regarded as seriously disabled, and they don't define any degree of pain. But what you're basically expressing in response to Judge Mormon's questions is that it has to nevertheless end up in some type of functional loss, which then gets you into, I guess, the doctor's assessment as to whether or not there is a range of motion and whether or not they've picked up that the pain rises to a level, you haven't used those words, but that's what we're hearing, rises to some kind of level that you effectively are not going to be using it. So the Marine who forces it on up nevertheless could get a functional loss if routinely he's not going to use it. I mean, yes, he'll do it, but boy, we're really picking on the Marines here, or praising the Marines, I guess, anyway. But anyway, and you end up with Lichtenfels, which says it's an actual limitation and focused only on you get the additional for pain throughout, which may be this case. And DeLuca, which doesn't mention Lichtenfels, but a couple other regulatory provisions, and says, wait a minute, you do get the functional loss and functional impairment if pain effectively rises to the level where you're not going to be using it. You're going to have that functional loss and impairment. And perhaps those two cases need to be brought together. Is that basically what you're saying? I think that accurately
describes our position, Your Honor.
Well, you can see where people can get misled from your position, and we're not saying we accept it, but when it's just plainly laid out that painful use must be regarded as seriously disabled, that's in the context of above, but people can be misled by that on your interpretation, from your interpretation, in difference to your interpretation.
I'd like to...
Go ahead.
Talk a little bit about your supplemental response to the court's order. You talk about that the threshold of degree of pain is pain that limits the range of motion following repetitive testing. DeLuca and 4.45, I believe, discuss weakness. They discuss loss of strength, loss of endurance. I don't see anywhere in any of the Secretary's materials, instructions to examiners, or anything to discuss any of these other factors, and I see no criteria for how you would measure loss of endurance or loss of strength that would enable someone to get a rating based on that functional loss.
Let me confer with my co-counsel for a second.
Sure.
Just to answer your question, Your Honor, while I'm looking for the N21 provision that I believe discusses that, is the Secretary's position that those factors under 4.45 are also limiting, and in the guidance that Secretary tried to implement following, or has implemented following DeLuca, those would be rated on the same way as pain, is whether they further limit the range of motion.
So if somebody has less speed, how does that result in loss of range of motion?
Less.
Or if somebody has less strength, you know, I'm not sure. I think you have sort of a square peg and you're trying to fit round holes into it.
Well, for less strength, Your Honor, I believe that would be illustrated, I guess, just as an example, if someone's lifting weights or something like that, you can do it once, but maybe you can't do it two or three times because your strength is not adequate to...
I understand that, but with the range of motion, it's not done with weights. It's how far can I move my leg, my arm, my shoulder, whatever. And if I am, you know, a lot of exams show their strength 4 or 5, you know, things like that. They talk about hand grip or things like this. And it's not clear to me that that weakness that's demonstrated, even though somebody can move it all day long, is recognized in VA's compensation scheme.
I believe, Your Honor, if someone could, I guess, if it never impacted their range of motion, I don't think it would be compensated at a higher level. But if someone has sufficient weakness, it should impact their range of motion, especially following the repetitive testing that VA has set up as an instruction to their physicians to look at further functional loss from range of motion on pain on use, et cetera. And those exams are supposed to compensate as well for section 4.45 factors as well. For example, in this case, when the physician said there was no further functional loss through pain of use, based under the guidelines that the secretary has given the physicians, that should indicate to the rater and the person who's reviewing the exam that there was no further impairment of these other factors that DeLuca directs the secretary to have the examiners consider.
Seems to me the secretary has a myopic view of what functional loss may be if it ties everything to only impact on range of motion. And I suggest that's something the secretary may wish to examine in the future.
Is it your position that the board had an adequate basis upon which to conclude, adequate medical basis upon which to reach the conclusions that it did with regard to the impact of pain?
Yes, Your Honor, because the examiner did commented on the pain, but found and also commented on the range of motion loss. The examiner said that the knee does not affect her appellant's daily living, and the examiner found that there was no additional functional loss through repetitions. So, appellant has not disagreed with the contents of the exam. So,
you say in your supplemental filing, page 9 of the supplemental filing, that the examiner should take, in describing how the examiner determines the impact of pain, first you point to 4.59, which I note appears to be limited to arthritis, but nevertheless, I understand that you're using that to show how you can express pain. Facial expression, wincing, etc., and pressure manipulation should be carefully noted. Then you go on to say the examiner should have the claimant perform at least 3 repetitions of range of motion, unless repetitive testing is medically contraindicated. Then you go on to say that the examiner should use the examination worksheet, joints examination worksheet, see attachment exhibit C. I don't see where any of that was done in these medical exams. And when I look at your exhibit C, I see this laundry list of all kinds of things that a medical examiner ought to be looking at when examining joints, including the knee, in an examination, including a comprehensive medical history that includes 13 items, a physical examination that includes 8 items, a loss of joint function with use that includes pain, fatigue, weakness, lack of endurance, incoordination, and has amplification as to those things, normal range of motion, knee range of motion, and then finally, 4 or maybe 5 pages later, diagnosis. And I'm having a hard time finding where you can say that the board had an adequate medical basis upon which to reach its conclusions. So explain that to me, if you would, please. Why would you present that as an exhibit in support of your position that everything was fine just the way it was done?
Well, Your Honor, we will concede that the examination does not have all the findings that is in this worksheet. Appellant did not contest the adequacy of the exam in his pleadings, so that's not an issue that was raised to the secretary in an assertion of error in this case. But
doesn't it all tie together with regard to whether or not there's functional loss and whether or not the pain is at a level that results in limitation of motion, which equals functional loss, as I understand the argument?
Well, I believe, Your Honor, with respect to the functional loss as rated under the diagnostic code in this case, the exam worksheet tells the examiner to perform at least three repetitions of range of motion and provide measurements based on flexion and extension and determine whether there's any additional functional loss after the three repetitions. And I believe that was done in this case as indicated in the exam, the October 2006 exam, Your Honor.
In Shafrath, this court said that functional loss due to pain is to be rated at the same level as functional loss where flexion is impeded. And functional loss caused by either factor, pain on use or limitation of flexion. Isn't that in contradiction to what you've been asserting, that the pain has to result in actual limitation of flexion?
Your Honor, we've read that as saying that the impediment would be some sort of, mechanical range of motion loss, and then the functional loss due to pain is what it says would be range of motion loss that's caused by painful motion.
So you've interpreted as the functional loss where flexion is impeded, which the court compares with functional loss due to pain, to be only a mechanical functional loss. But then functional loss due to pain has to also be loss of range of motion.
Yes, Your Honor. And I believe that would be supported by the actual holding in Shafrath, which I believe the court ordered the VA to instate a 10% rating for the veteran. And while it was an appeal of a rating reduction, the veteran complained of pain throughout his range of motion on his arm, I believe. And there are higher ratings than a 10% for that particular joint. And I believe that if the court had meant that it was to rate the pain itself as equal to a range of motion loss, then it would direct the secretary to consider whether a higher rating was warranted.
So you're saying that Shafrath stands for the position that if somebody asserts pain on use, that they get a 10% rating?
If there's no further limitation of motion, yes, Your Honor.
And I believe you said that that's the secretary's informal policy in your supplemental briefing?
Yes. There's no regulatory policy, but it is the secretary's interpretation of the regulation. That is what the secretary believes 4.59 requires, even in the absence of arthritis. Lichtenfeld's, and I think its progeny, also say that that would be applicable under 5003 as well, if there's no actual limitation of motion. Lichtenfeld's does say that to go to 5200, et cetera, the diagnostic criteria for range of motion, that there must be actual limitation of motion. Then the court went on to say that's not present in this case, so we're not even going to go to that. We're just going to say whether there's pain present, and that the pain is entitling the veteran to a 10% rating in that case.
Well, but 5003 is somewhat unique in that it provides specifically for a rating for pain with no loss of motion, as opposed to the other diagnostic codes that just say you have to have this much loss of range of loss of motion, range of motion loss. So I think that it's a little bit of apples and oranges to a certain extent comparing what 5003 says with sort of importing some of this other criteria. Anyway, go ahead, please.
Your footnote one in your supplemental briefing noted a conflict, I guess, between the FAST letters 0422, which talked about an additional increase, even where you had a compensable limitation of flexion that might be provided by the secretary, which would be at the regional offices, but something that the board would not be able to grant. This seems to create a situation where among the regional offices you may discretionarily have an added 10% to the rating that's provided by the diagnostic codes based on some observation of pain that could be totally unequally applied by the regional offices and could not be equally enforced by the board. Has that situation been brought to the secretary and the general counsel for clarification and bringing the two issues together?
It is not, Your Honor.
Would you bring that back to the your superiors?
They have been made aware of that potential conflict.
Because it creates a real problem.
If there are no further questions, the Secretary would like the Court to affirm the Board's decision.
Thank you very much. Mr. Campbell, you have 10 minutes.
I just have a few points, Your Honor, unless there's further questions. The first point I'd like to address is whether the October exam is adequate. There's been a lot of questions on that this morning. It's important to note that we haven't argued it was inadequate. The Secretary agrees it's not inadequate. Therefore, it must be adequate. And in that case, we'd ask there not be a remand for a further exam for the additional reason that an exam 5 or 6 years after October 6 is not going to be very helpful to elucidate the issues of this case. Another point that Judge Mormon mentioned that...
So if we rule against your interpretation, ignore what might be perceived by some as an inadequate exam, find the board's statement of reasons and basis adequate for review, you don't want a remand.
I don't think a remand for further examination would be helpful. So we would ask not for it, of course. If that's all we're going to get, we'll take it.
I'm trying to figure out which one you want. I just heard a little, if that's all we're going to get, you'll take it.
Well,
so
we think
is that a little backstep peddling there?
It was a little backpedaling, Your Honor.
And which one do you want?
We want no remand for further examination. Another issue was whether 4.59, Judge Mormon said it was may have been limited to arthritis. That's certainly the first phrase of that rule, but we believe it's not limited to arthritis simply because of the title of the regulation, which is painful motion. That wasn't added by a subsequent codifier. Those are the Secretary's own words and would make that regulation applicable to all painful motion, not simply painful motion in arthritis.
I'm going to interrupt you and ask you to talk to your co-counsel there.
Okay.
Go ahead. At the end of the day, you're dealing with a veteran. We don't remand just for purposes of it's a lesser remedy that we can provide.
So if you find that the examination is inadequate, we would take a remand for prospective relief.
Thank you.
Okay. Another issue, Secretary tried to distinguish Shafrath for not instructing for a higher rating. I believe it's important to note that in Shafrath, the issue was whether there was whether a reduction was correct, not whether an increase was appropriate. This court said reduction was not appropriate, so there was no reason for an instruction for consideration of pain on remand. Those are all the points I had, unless the court has further questions.
Thank you very much. The case will be submitted. We'll come down and greet counsel.
All rise.